good afternoon. So, yep, that's on, okay. Before the break, we introduced set associative caches. I forgot to. And in set associative caches, we mentioned that we kind of stapled multiple direct map caches together. So we ended up, instead of having each row, each set, have one block in it, it has multiple blocks. But it's still kind of the same lookup process. We still split our address into tag, index, and offset. Number of index bits is based on the number of sets, number of rows. You know, the same lookup as for one of these stapled together direct map caches. But now we have multiple blocks in each set. We have to check all of them. So we have a bunch of valid bits and tag bits. We look at all of them, see if we find the value, and if we don't, we need to decide where to put it. I mentioned kind of our most common strategy is we assume we have locality, which means that we want to replace something that hasn't been used recently, because that's the least likely to be useful. So we can do this least recently used policy, and to do that, well, we need to track when things are used. This is extra information our cache normally wouldn't have. So we need to do some bookkeeping to know the order in which blocks in our set were used. And this needs to be updated even when a cache hit, which is kind of, you know, a bit of extra overhead. Then we looked briefly at mapping C code to data cache accesses. So thinking about, well, when we have code in C, we, you know, like accessing an array or something, how does that actually correspond to accessing our data cache? And one thing that comes out of that is that, well, as a programmer, we actually can influence our cache performance a lot in, you know, making sure our programs have good locality, good spatial and temporal locality that will very much influence our cache hit rate. And we can often do that by being careful about the order in which we do our calculations. Questions about things we covered last time? Okay, so let's talk some logistical issues. So page table 2 is due tomorrow before the first lab. That's 1:59 p.m. And late submissions are not normally accepted. It's due before the first lab because we're going to do an activity in the lab that's based on the submission, and I don't want to play the games of people who, you know, people in the 2 p.m. lab being not having the extra time versus people in the 6:30 lab, or what lab are you really in? It's due before the first lab. Late submission's not normally accepted. If you, that, you know, if it's not possible for you to submit on time, you need to make an exception with us. And we have this lab, which is a code review lab. So lab attendance is required. If you cannot or should not attend, you should let me know so we can figure something out. But if you don't do that, you're not going to get credit for the lab. The purpose of the lab is to get feedback on your code from others. This is them reading the code on your screen with you controlling what's being shown. It's about organization, clarity, readability, you know, that kind of feedback on the code. It is not a debugging session. You should not be running your code, not tracing your code. That is your job, not the purpose of this code review. So questions on the upcoming lab and other logistics. Okay. So when we finished up talking about caches last time, we were mentioning that we've talked very much about how we read from the cache, but we actually want to talk about how we write to the cache. Because, well, our programs do some writes. It typically, a program does mostly reading from memory, more, and a less writing, but writes are pretty important. And unlike what we saw with kind of how reads were handled, there's actually kind of some decisions caches have to make about how to handle writes. And there's kind of two decision points. So one, what we're going to do regardless is we're going to start out by checking, you know, is this value being written in our cache? We always need to know that. But if it's not in our cache, we have a choice to make. We could either add it to our cache, or we could just not add it. And we never made this choice with our read operation because we said, well, if it's not in our cache, of course we want to add it to our cache. With our write operation, caches make both decisions. And a way you can think about this is that, well, you know, we made the decision to always bring a value in when it was a miss on a read because we thought temporal locality told us that this would be useful. For a write, maybe it's less clear that temporal locality is like something we can count on being helpful. And depending on our answer to the second question, you know, maybe bringing the values in that are just being written isn't helpful. So some caches decide not to bring things in on writes. And we call this decision write allocate, meaning we bring it in if it's not there in the cache on a write versus write no allocate. Now, when we bring a value in on a write, you might say, oh, well, isn't that kind of free? We just take the value that's being written, put it in the cache. Like, why is there extra work? That value had to go to the cache anyways, because remember, the cache sits between the processor and memory. But that's not quite the case. And the problem is that if we have a cache block, that might be, say, 64 bytes. And our processor is probably not writing 64 bytes. We're probably writing, you know, 8 bytes. So to load our value, what we need to do is we have our value in the cache, and we have our value in memory that's also 64 bytes. We need to take all the bytes that aren't being written and copy them into the cache. So if we want to store the value that's being written in the cache, we actually need to do a big read of everything else that's in the cache block, because almost never will the processor be writing the whole cache block at once. Usually it'll just be writing a little part of it. So that's our write allocate versus write no allocate decision. So after we make that decision, a lot of the time we'll have a value in the cache that is being modified, either because we just brought it into the cache or because, you know, it was already there, like we read it earlier. Then we have a decision about what do we do about the write. There's kind of two options here, both of which are used. The simplest to implement option is that we just write the thing that the processor wrote, immediately send it to memory. This is called write through. So in that design, every write to the cache ends up going to memory right away. This is much simpler because, well, we don't need to think about does memory or the next level of cache have the correct value. The answer is yes, it does. We just put it there. The other option is that we don't do that. Why don't we want to just keep writing the value? Well, the whole point of having our caches was that we wouldn't access main memory or the bit slower, bigger caches all the time, that we would avoid accessing them. And this write-through policy says, well, every write is going to be an access to the next level, even though you're supposed to stop that from happening. That's the purpose of the cache, is to avoid accessing that slow thing. Now we're going to do it. So we have an alternate policy where we don't access it right away, and this is called write back. In this case, we're going to store the modified value in our cache, but we need to do some extra bookkeeping. And the reason why is that, well, if we just modify the value in our cache and don't do anything else, then at some point, that value will stop being in our cache, And then the program will want to read it, and it wants to read the value it modified. It doesn't want to read the old version. So something at some point needs to happen to make that get updated. Now, the simplest solution would be, well, why don't we just modify memory every time we evict something from our cache? We could do that, but that would make us write memory a whole lot of the time, when it turns out that most programs are mostly reading from memory and not writing. So we're going to need to remember which values are actually modified, so we only send those values to memory if we need to. And we're going to defer doing that as long as possible, because we really don't want to access the next level of cache or main memory. So we're going to wait until we absolutely have to do it. When do we have to do it? When the value gets evicted. Then you might say, well, if we're running the value anyways, how is this saving us any accesses to memory, right? Because, you know, if we write one value, we're going to write it to memory. If we write two values, we're going to write both of them to memory. Where's the savings? And the savings comes from when we have multiple writes to the same cache block. And there's kind of two ways that can happen. So one way is, let's say the value we're writing is a counter. So we write 0, then we write 1, then 2, then 3. With the write back policy, as long as that value stays in the cache, we don't need to send it to memory until much later. In which case, you know, if the counter's gone up to 100, we'll just write 100. We won't write 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, we'll just write the final value. Also, it could be the case that we'll write this value and then we'll modify this adjacent value. You know, if we're writing, say, part of an array, and we'll write the whole cache block at once with all those writes together rather than doing them separately with the write back policy. So as long as we have some actual locality, temporal, spatial, the write back policy should result in doing less writes and therefore be sort of more efficient. Questions on our kind of two decision points. We have this write allocate versus write no allocate, like what do we do if the value is not cached? And then we have the how do we actually modify the next level of cache question with write through, do it right away versus write back, delay it. Questions? So let's sort of view set. So we have our first, our write allocate. So as an example, in kind of our write allocate case, the processor is going to ask the cache to write, say, 10 to the byte ABCD. And in the write allocate design, the cache, well, in either design, the cache is going to look it up. In this example, let's say it's not there. In the write allocate design, we're going to add it. But we have to add the whole cache block. We can't say we have one byte of a cache block. We have to say the whole cache block's valid. So we're going to ring in the whole cache block, which means we have to read the rest of the cache block in order to complete that write. So even if we're doing write back, we still have to read the rest of the cache block. We still have to access memory to complete this write. If we're doing write no allocate, we're going to, again, check if the value's in our cache. And if not finding it, rather than adding it, we're just going to say, OK, let's assume it's not useful to cache it and just send it to the next level of cache. Questions about write allocate versus write through? Or write back, write no allocate, write allocate versus write no allocate. I'm skipping ahead. Okay. So then let's get to the other decision. So let's assume for this example that for some reason we have the value being written in the cache. This could be because we read it earlier or because we just did write allocate. So what we're going to do is, regardless of our policy, we're first going to modify our cache. We always want the cache to have the value we just wrote. With write through, we do the simplest thing, and we just also modify the next level. So this is the simplest option, but not the most efficient. Our more efficient idea is that we're going to modify the cache only. And that should be sufficient because all our accesses go through the cache. So if the processor later on, asks to read OXABCD, it's not going to ask the RAM, it's going to ask the cache. So it's going to get the correct value and not the sort of old value. But the problem is that, well, the cache isn't going to keep the correct value around forever. In particular, sometime later, we could end up reading something that requires us to evict that value from the cache. So in this example, address 11CD happens to match to the same set, and our replacement policy said, this block, the one containing ABCD, that's what we're replacing. And when this value is replaced, we can't do what we've done so far with replacement, which is just forget about the value in the cache, because we have some unfinished business. We need to write it to memory because there's a modification that the next level of cache doesn't know about. And we want to not do this all the time, so something we're doing when we modify the value is marking it as what's called dirty, meaning that it's not been cleaned up to match what's in memory yet. So when we clean this dirty value, we're going to do that by modifying memory or the next level of cache to reflect the modifications there. Until that's done, we're going to say it's dirty. And we're going to track which values are dirty because we don't want to write every single value that was only just read and not modified when we have an eviction. But when we do evict a value that was modified, we're going to have to do some extra steps. So here, I'm reading 11CD, and that causes me to write ABCD to memory, and then read 11CD from memory. So my previously just a read now is turned into a write and a read. Write of a different value because we have this write back policy. Questions? Yes? When I say conflicts, does it mean dirty values are present? What I mean by conflicts is that we have what we call a conflict miss, meaning that this maps to the same set as OXABCD, meaning it has the same index bits. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? So to track this dirty information, we're going to add an additional field to our cache. We'll call it dirty bit. We're going to want one for each block. And this is going to track whether the value needs to be written to memory if we evict it, so we don't forget about some modification. Note that we're tracking one dirty bit for each block. Generally, we're not going to identify which part of the block changed. So it might be the case here that only address 6.1 was actually modified to be different than main memory. Yes, we could conceptually have a cache which does the bookkeeping to realize that. Generally, we're not going to do that. We're just going to say, this block has something that changed in it, and we're going to write the whole thing. And so what that means for our writing process, so here we're going to have a write allocate write back cache. We're also set associative with an LRU policy, so we have all this extra bookkeeping information now. We have some dirty bits and some LRU bits. In this example, I'm writing this value, FF, into address 04. And this cache, we have 2 byte blocks, which implies we have 1 offset bit. We have 2 sets, which implies we have 1 index bit. And everything else is our tag. So the address 04 has an offset of 0 and an index of 0 and a tag of 00001. So when we're doing this write, just like with a read, our first step is to try to find the value in the cache. So I know my index is 0. I look in index 0, and I'm going to check all of my ways in that set. So it's valid, but that tag doesn't match. This is valid, but that tag does not match. So it's a miss. And since it's a miss, I consult my write allocate versus write no allocate policy. And in this example, we say it's write allocate. So that means we're going to add it to the cache. Now, where do we put it? Well, it has to go in set 0. So even though we have this free block, can't use that because it has to go in the set that matches the index bits. And we have 2 places we could put it in set 0. And you might say, oh, well, wouldn't it be less work not to replace the dirty one? And that's true, but that's not what our least recently used replacement policy says. We want to replace the least recently used way, and presumably the left side is way 0 and the right side is way 1. So the least recently used way is way 1 of that set. So we're going to replace that. And we're going to want to put in the value FF for memory address 4, but we need to fill in a whole block. So we're going to actually need to bring in, have 2 bytes in the cache. But before we can even start to put those bytes there, we have this old value here. And we can't just forget about it because it is marked as dirty. So we need to take care of this, that it's marked as dirty, and that means that there's some value in the data part of it that isn't in memory yet. And we need to make sure it gets there. If we just discard it, it will never get there, and you'd be pretty annoyed as a programmer. You wrote to a global variable, for example, and then you read from it later, and the value you wrote just disappeared. That would not be acceptable, so we better, you know, make sure we don't just discard this value. We have to write it back to the next level so it doesn't get forgotten. So in this example, we have to actually do that writing. So we're going to write 2 bytes to the next level. Then we're going to fill in our block. And because we only wrote 1 byte, but our blocks contain 2, this means I had to read in the other byte into the cache because I have no way of saying this cache only has the first byte of the block. I also, just like we do on reads, updated our least recently used information. So I now indicated that way 0 is now least recently used because we just did something to way 1 of this first set. Questions on our sort of process, you know, kind of the worst case for write to the cache for this write back, write allocate policy. So we can also imagine the same scenario if we had a write no allocate policy. So remember, our first step was look for the value in the cache. And we mentioned we don't find it. If we had a write no allocate policy, doesn't matter if we're doing write back, we just send it to memory. Because, well, it's not going to be stored in the cache. There's nothing to update in the cache to store it if that's our policy. Now, I will mention that our most common cache policies, I'll go back to this slide, is either we do write no allocate write through, or write allocate write back. Those are the most common policies in practice, even though we can mix and match them technically. Most commonly, the caches you'll look at will either be write allocate write back or write no allocate write through. And why is that? Well, kind of write no allocate write through is the simplest to implement. There's no extra bookkeeping, no complicated fetching parts of a cache block logic. And write allocate write back is the best we can do if we assume we have locality in our writes. I guess I'll also mention, because you might say, gosh, write through seems really expensive. Because we're writing to memory just as much as the program is, our caches aren't helping with the writes at all in terms of avoiding accessing memory. Often, when you see a write through cache, we'll have like a write through L1 cache and a write back L2 cache. So it's not the case that our writes will make it all the way to memory, they just make it to the next level of cache. And you can kind of think of that as a situation where the processor designers have decided to like absorb the writes at a particular level of cache as part of their design. So anyways, let's say we have our most common option for locality here of write allocate and write back. And what I have here is I have a cache that's two-way set associative. So I have, again, I have two-byte blocks, which implies one offset bit. I have two sets, which implies one index bit. And I have my write allocate write back policy. And I want us to assume for each of these three accesses that we're doing them from this initial state so we don't carry through. So if we make a mistake on the first part, we don't carry through an error. Let's just assume we're starting with that initial state. You know, and then doing a write, then starting with that same initial state, ignoring the write, and then doing, you know, the read from 5.2. Because my question is, for each of these, are we going to read a value from memory or the next level of cache, whichever is applicable, or write a value to memory or the next level of cache? And notice that we saw an example earlier where it's possible for us to do both. And also we found out that it's very possible that we'll write a value that isn't the one that we're accessing from the processor because we're evicting something and need to write it back. So I'll give you a couple minutes to work through that, check with your neighbor, see if you agree on what should the answers be. For which of these are we going to read or write a value to the next level of our memory hierarchy? Who would like some more time? Okay, so let's do our first option, writing one byte to 0x33. Who thinks that that's going to involve reading something from the next level of cache? Thinks that is not going to involve reading something from the next level of cache. And no clue. Okay, who thinks that's going to involve writing something to the next level of cache? Thinks that's not going to involve writing something to the next level of cache. And no clue. Okay, so this is, I get the same answer of no reads or writes. So what's going on here? Well, we already have this value here. So what we're going to do is we're going to replace that with a new value, and nothing else needs to change except our L or U information, which needs to be updated. So that's a hit. And with a write back policy, we don't actually write the value until we're done with it. Yes, question back there. So the old value of 0x33 never needs to get written all the way to memory? Yes. So for example, if we were like incrementing the counter and we like incremented it from 0 to 1, which made it dirty originally, and now we're doing it from 1 to 2, yep, we're only going to write the 2. But yes, and that's precisely the reason we do write back, is because we're avoiding writing values that we don't need to. Other questions about this scenario? Okay, so let's go to our next case, and we're going to start in here. So we're looking at our reading one byte from OX52. So who thinks that's going to involve reading something from the next level of cache? Thinks that is not going to involve reading something from the next level of cache. And no clue. Okay. Thinks that's going to involve writing something to the next level of cache. Thinks that's not going to involve writing something to the next level of cache. And no clue. So we have a split. So for this one, let's first, I get that we need to write and read. And for figuring this out, first I want to see where are we accessing. We're going to put this value in the cache. This is a read. So we know, no matter what happens, we're going to have the value from this address in the cache when we're done. And this has set 1, so it goes here. And we're going to first check, is this a hit? And the answer is no. That, yes, we have 2 valid blocks, but the tags do not match 5-2. So this is a cache miss, and we want to put the value in the cache, and we have a least recently used policy. So that says that, label our ways, this is way 1, 0. That tells us that the least recently used way is way 1, which is this block of the set. So that's what we're replacing. That's where we're going to put the block containing 5-2. The block containing 5-2 is 5-2 to 5-3 because 5-2 has an offset of 0. So before we can bring that value in, we need to kind of clear this dirty bit. So this is dirty, which means that these values need to be remembered somewhere else. So we're going to write back those values. And then we're going to actually update the block to contain a cache version of the block containing address 5-2, which is also going to contain the value from address 5-3. And that we're going to have to read from memory or the next level of cache because it's not here. Some questions? What I did there. So I think the main thing people miss is you have to look at the LOU information. You might say, gosh, wouldn't it have been more convenient to, you know, replace the non-dirty blocks? We have to do less work. And that's not a crazy idea. I don't know of caches that do that. It's not a crazy idea. But that's not what a least recently used replacement policy says to do. Yeah. Question, if we were doing these sequentially, would we be replacing from way zero? Yes, because the LRU information would be different. Other questions? Yeah.
Does writing update the LRU?
Does writing update the LRU? Yes. In the same way reading does, you know, we'll make sure the thing we're writing or reading is marked as most recently used, and the other things are less recently used. Other questions? Okay. So let's do our last example here. Reading a byte from address 50. So who thinks that this, you know, starting from our initial state, will involve doing a read from the next level of cache memory? Thinks it will not involve a read from the next level of cache memory. Okay. Who thinks it will involve a write to the next level of cache memory? Will not involve a write. And no clue. A few no clues. Okay. So this value is going to be, if we like decode the address, we get 101000. That's offset 0, index 0. So it's index 0, so we look here, this is valid. This is the tag we're looking for is 010100. That's not this. And it's also not the other tag, so this is a miss. And we have to put it in set index 0 because that was the index bits we started out with. And it goes in way 0 of set index 0. Because of the LRU information, which means that we're going to replace this 30 and 31. And that's not marked as dirty, so we can just get rid of it. We don't need to update the next level because we know this is just the value we already got from the next level. They have it. We don't need to send it to them again. They already got it. So we're just going to replace it without writing it back and put in the new value we are going to have to read. And we chose way zero again because of what the LRU information was. If it was set the other way, we would have actually had to replace, in this case, a dirty value. So, some questions about scenario here. So one scenario that this doesn't cover is that we didn't have any misses when it's a write. So as an example, if we go back to here, to our initial state, if we had, say, a write to address 0x43, which is also set 1, offset 1, then that would be the case where the write allocate part matters. But in the examples we saw, the write allocate didn't matter. We either weren't writing or the value was a hit. If we were writing 0x43, so we'd look at set 1, we'd say, is the value here? Well, no, the tags don't match. So in that case, we would look at our write allocate policy and we'd say, oh, we need to replace something and read in from the rest of the block, which is 0x14. And what would we replace? Well, that would be based on the LRU information. It would be the 32 and 33. 33, and we'd have to write back. So this would be, that would be a write and a read if we had that, which is the first example we saw. with this policy. And how did I figure out this was OX42? Well, if I look at OX43, this is 0, 0, 1. This is our offset bit, and then our index bit, and the block is the value with offset of 0 through an offset of all 1s. And that's how I determined what the block was, and therefore, well, this is offset 1 of the block, the other half of the block is offset 0, and that's from address OX42. Questions on... So as I mentioned, this write allocate write back, that's kind of our common cache design when you want to take advantage of locality. We also have the design when we want lower overhead, where we do write, no allocate write through, and that's what we have here. And one of the examples of why we have lower overhead is that we aren't tracking dirty bits anymore, because for write through, we don't need them. The question is here, same accesses, same questions. Are we reading to the next level or writing to the next level? Give you a minute to figure this out. Who'd like some more time? People? Okay, let's start with our first access, the writing 1 byte to address OX33. Who thinks that this will require reading a value from the next level of cache or memory? Thinks this will not require reading a value from the next level of cache or memory? And no clue. Thinks this will require writing a value to the next level of cache or memory. Thinks this will not require writing a value to the next level of cache or memory, and no clue. Okay, so I get that this writes a value to the next level of cache. So this is where we're seeing the big difference with write through. That, yes, we're going to modify our value here with a new value that comes from the processor. But we have no way of remembering that we also need to have that be modified in main memory. We just don't have any way of knowing that. So we have a write-through policy, which means that what we're going to do instead of remembering that we need to update it later is update it right now. So we're going to update it in our cache, and we're going to also send it right away to the next level, because otherwise we're going to not know that we need to do that. And there's no reads because the value containing that block was already there. And also, even if it wasn't there, we have a write no allocate policy, so we never actually read something in on a write. We do it on a read, of course, just like we saw when we talked about reads. We don't never do it on a write because of that policy. It's just a choice we made that you can legitimately argue maybe isn't a good choice, but it's a choice that this cache made. Questions? So this was the example where we already had the value in the cache. If we had, say, 1 byte to an address that wasn't cached, so our 0x43, this would all sort of write to next level. And because of the write no allocate and do not store in the cache. So there would be no access to the next level, no read from the next level if we were writing something that wasn't in the cache either, because of the write no allocate policy. Questions? On our write case. Okay. So let's move on to our reading 1 byte from address 0x52. So who thinks that's going to involve reading a value from the next level of cache or memory? X52. I think that's going to involve not reading a value from the next level of cache or memory. And no clue. Okay. And how about who thinks that's going to involve writing a value to the next level of cache or memory? It's not going to involve writing a value. And no clue. Okay. Have a little mix, but we have plurality on the answer I get. That to do this, we're going to, we're going to figure out where to put this value. So we're going to do our cache lookup. We're going to set one with index one, which is there. And we're going to first check if this value is already there. We're going to see that it's not in our way zero value in set one, and it's not in the way one value. So this is a read, and we always bring in values on a read. That's going to be our policy no matter whether it's write no allocate or not. So we're going to look at our LRU information to decide where it goes. And the LRU information says it replaces this block here. But since this is a write-through cache, we know that even if that value's been modified while it's been in our cache, that's fine. We don't need to do anything extra about that because we already handled it by writing it to the next level. So to replace the value, we're just going to discard it and overwrite it. We don't need to do any extra work. There's no other writes to the next level. We are going to read, the value that the processor requested and the rest of that cache block. So Questions? Okay. And our last scenario is the same, except that we're going to replace a different block in the cache. And after all of these, we update the LRU information, you know, just like we've been doing before, making sure that whatever we just accessed, whether you're to write or read, is marked as the most recently used thing. The other thing in this two-way cache is therefore least recently used. So questions? Gosh, look up here. Okay. So that's kind of everything about our policy for writes. So one thing, you know, on writes, to mention, because what I've shown you so far, it might seem like, gosh, writeback is really expensive. Like, we have this extra bookkeeping, and now our normal reads are now going to be so much slower because we have to wait for a value to be written before we can read it in. And it also seems like write-through is pretty expensive because now every time I write, I have to wait for a write to the slower next level for that to happen. And you might say, gosh, why do any of these strategies like make my memory accesses kind of efficient? And a big trick that caches use in practice is something called a write buffer. Basically what the cache will do is rather than waiting for the write to complete, we'll have a small buffer, kind of a little cache, of things waiting to be written. And we'll consider the write done enough for us to move on and have our cache do the next access when it's put in that buffer. Now the problem is that if I just wrote a value, say, you know, because it was evicted or because I have a write through cache and, you know, every time the program writes, I write it directly to memory, it might be the case that we read back that value immediately after it's evicted or immediately after writing it for a write through cache. And while it's in the write buffer, it hasn't made it to the next level. So if we look in our cache, we won't find it. It's not there. If we look in the next level, we won't find it. So how do we solve that problem? Well, we look in the write buffer as an additional place to look when we're searching our cache. And in order for that not to be expensive, the write buffer is going to be pretty small. So it's going to be okay for us to like search like all 10-ish entries and check if it matches what we're trying to access. But then that means that while up to 10-ish writes are happening, we can be doing other stuff at the same time, and just the writes will complete in the background. And as long as the program doesn't do enough writes to fill up the buffer, the program won't notice that the writes take time. Obviously, that won't always happen, but often it will, and therefore, you know, as long as our write buffer's big enough relative to how often your program tries to write, the writes kind of look free. You know, they just happen while your program's also doing other stuff, while the cache is also like reading other stuff and things like that. Some questions about this write buffer idea? And I'll just mention generally, so we've seen a lot of design decisions in caches. So we have things like block sizes, having multiple layers of cache, having different numbers of ways, and things like that. And there's lots of trade-offs we're making. Like when we make our sort of number of ways higher, we're making, you know, our hits slower, because there's more tags to check and all that, but making us have more cache hits. You know, if we're, you know, adding bigger blocks, we're making us probably have more cache hits, but making the misses a bunch slower because we have to bring in more stuff. And how this all happens really depends on the program's runs. We have an upcoming homework where you need to make, you know, sort of one cache look a lot better than the other by choosing the right access pattern. And we can do that in general. If you want to make a cache look bad, access a bunch of things, And until something gets evicted, then access the thing that was just evicted. Like, that's kind of a worst case. We can just keep accessing what was just evicted and say, gosh, you made the wrong decision there, cache. But the reason caches work is that's not what real programs do. Real programs, like, have this kind of locality and such, and we kind of want to look at what do real programs do when we use our cache. And people who are designing a processor for like a laptop or a desktop, well, they'll think of some programs they think are important for laptops or desktops and simulate them and compare, like, well, how much faster or slower would this program run, you know, if we had a cache with a different size block or something like that, by computing a number of hits and, you know, calculating, well, how much slower is a hit now that we have a bigger block and that sort of thing. Questions? Our cache, brief cache trails discussion. Okay, so in our remaining 15 minutes, I'm going to talk about a different type of caches that I sort of previewed way earlier, which is caches for page table lookups. So this is kind of our overall page table lookup process. And it seems like now that we know we have caches, we've made it a lot faster. You know, that we have one cache access, two and three for this two-level page table. If we had a four-level page table, like what my laptop has, that would be five cache accesses. And we've learned that caches can be much faster, so that seems nice. But it turns out that this is not going to be good enough, that these three cache accesses are not going to be acceptable performance. So we're going to add a special new extra crash cache. And what that cache is going to do is it's going to get us from our VPN. We're going to go through this cache, and that's going to short circuit the whole multi-level lookup. We're going to cache that whole process to avoid those two accesses to our normal memory cache. Or alternately, on this diagram, you know, we're going to take this whole thing here, our whole virtual page number, we're going to put it through our cache, and we're going to get to this part here, and we're going to therefore, in the ideal case, cut out that whole process there. Now, obviously, we'll still have to do that because this is a cache. It doesn't have everything. It only has things that have been accessed recently enough. But this is the next cache we're going to talk about, this very special cache for page table entries. Yes?
So is the cache going to be taking in virtual page numbers, like it won't have any physical
addresses? Is the cache going to be taking in virtual page numbers? Yes. So the cache is going to take in virtual page numbers, and rather than storing bytes of memory, it's storing page table entries.
Okay.
Other questions? And the reason we're doing this is that, you know, especially when we have multi-level page tables, the performance of our memory caches is not acceptable. So for example, a fast L1 cache takes like maybe two cycles for a hit in latency. So we're saying that we're going to add, you know, for a four-level page table, eight cycles to every memory access the program does. That is just not acceptable. But the question is, like, why can we make a cache that solves this problem and is so much more efficient than what our memory caches are? And part of it is that we're doing the whole lookup in one cache lookup. But another part of it is that we have kind of some special properties of the access patterns programs typically make to page table entries. So if we think of a typical program that's running, we're running, you know, some function here, and that function's code probably fits in less than a few kilobytes, because, you know, a few kilobytes of machine code, that's a huge amount of assembly. You know, many hundreds of instructions, thousands of instructions. So this is probably 1 to 2 pages here, which means 1 to 2 page table entries that we need to keep in track of for the function's code. And probably we're accessing some data, but most functions are gonna access something that's not too huge, maybe something that's like tens of kilobytes, maybe even 100 kilobytes, but 100 kilobytes is, tens of pages. 10 kilobytes is like 3 pages. So often we'll be accessing data, which is like 1 to, some number of pages, but tens might be higher in some cases, but typically like 10, not more, typically not more than tens of pages. Some exceptional cases, maybe a lot more. And we also have some stuff on the stack. But typically we have like only a couple kilobytes of stuff in the stack at most. So this is, again, 1 to 2 pages for the stack. Another way we can think about this is that if we think of our page table entries, the pointers to these pages that we actually care about to run our functions have really excellent temporal locality in them. And that's partly because each of these page table entries represents a huge amount of data compared to what we saw with our memory caches. With our memory caches, each entry in the cache could represent tens of bytes. Here, they represent thousands already. And that means that we're gonna have a cache where if we're caching page table entries, because we have this excellent temporal locality, we're accessing the same small set of pages over and over again, we're gonna have a very, very high hit rate with a very small cache. And also, the page table entries themselves are really tiny. We need, an 8-byte page table entry for each of these things, which is smaller than the data we typically store in our memory caches for a single block. Like much smaller. So we can make this cache really small and still have an excellent hit rate. And a smaller cache is a faster cache. We can make that small cache really fast. We can even make it really fast if it has very high associativity. When I mentioned fully associative caches, I mentioned we typically didn't do that for memory caches. These are caches where that's not always, but sometimes something a processor will do, because they're small enough that we can build that. I think these days it's more typical that they're like 8-ish ways, but with a smaller cache, we can do that higher associativity and it's not a big problem. So we're gonna talk about these page table entry caches. And because IBM made some interesting choices in the 60s and 70s, and I don't know exactly which, but somewhere around there, the typical manual here is TLB, for Translation Lookaside Book, but it's a page table entry cache. And to kind of contrast it to our L1 cache, and the reason I'm doing that is it's basically organized the same way, just takes in different indexes and stores different data. So rather than taking in a physical address, like our L1 cache, we're gonna take in a virtual page number. And rather than having the data from an address, we're gonna have the last level page table entry. For that virtual page number. And if we're taking in virtual page numbers, well, we have to take in a value and split it up into a tag index and offset with the cache designs you see. And that's exactly what we're gonna do. We're gonna split up our virtual page number into a TLB index and a TLB tag. You might say, wait a moment, where's the offset bits? Didn't we always have tag index and offset? And well, We're going to have one entry for block. So one entry for block means zero offset bits. And why do we have one entry for block? Well, the idea is that a page table entry already represents a huge amount of data, so there's not much benefit to storing multiple of them together. You know, that we don't have excellent spatial locality between page table entries because, you know, usually if you're accessing, say, one page of code, machine code, that's not actually a great indicator you're accessing the previous one or the next one. It's not nothing, but it's not a great indicator. And another way of thinking about it is that, well, if it would really benefit us to have multiple page table entries stored together in our TLB, maybe instead what we should do is we should increase the page size. Because that will give us that benefit and make the page table smaller and make the OS have to do less work to allocate stuff. So, you know, probably that's what we should do if it would really be beneficial. So TLBs will always have one entry per block. So each block in the TLB won't be a block of bytes of data, it will be a page table entry. And that means that our virtual page number, which is our equivalent of an address, we're gonna have zero offset bits, that's one thing in the block, zero bits to find out which one, some index bits, and a tag. Came from the virtual page number. And the reason our TLBs are going to be so useful is that we can have something like tens of entries for at least a first level TLB and get a very, very good hit rate. If we only had tens of entries in our L1 caches, we would not get a good hit rate. Our program accesses more stuff than that typically. And that means we can have a very fast cache design, possibly a highly associative cache design, so conflict misses aren't a problem in RTLB. And we, you know, these designs that we, you know, can't make as efficient with the sizes we need for the L1 cache. Next questions. So, as I mentioned, our TLB is going to cache last level page table entries. And we don't care which last level table it is. You know, we're going to cache the result of the whole lookup. And this means that on a TLB hit, here's my diagram where I faded out all that stuff I X'd out earlier. We just take the virtual address, put it in the TLB, and when we have a hit, we just get the last page table entry and use it. Now, we could have a miss. And when we have a miss, we're going to do that whole lookup process, that whole thing you're implementing for the page table assignment. And we're going to store the result of that lookup in the TLB, so hopefully next time we don't have to do it. Some questions? And as I mentioned, our TLBs, other than substituting our full physical memory addresses for virtual page numbers and bytes of data for page table entries, they're going to be organized the same way as our normal caches. So we'll have our page offset, which the TLB doesn't know about. And we'll have our VPN, which is split up into an index and a tag. In this case, I have 3 index bits, so I must have kind of 8 sets. And this happens to be a two-way set associative TLB. So in each of those sets, I have 2 page table entries. And when we do a lookup, we're going to look in the appropriate set. We're going to look for a tag that matches. In this case, that will be the one from the second way. And then we get this page table entry. And in this case, we take this 0x12f and combine it with our page offset to form our final physical address. And also, we check the writable bit and the other permission bits that are part of the page table entry. questions about our page table organization. Some people look confused, so assuming I should have some. Okay, so in that case, let's quickly do this exercise here. So I say we have a four-entry, two-way TLB. So what does that mean? Four entries means we have four page table entries split across two ways, which means we have two entries. I'll probably be more explicit. Four divided by two equals two entries per way. So I have a way with two entries, another way with two entries. That's my TLB. And I want to know how many index bits. Well, the index bits determine which row, which set we go to. We determine we have two blocks per way, meaning two sets. So I have one index bit. Then the question is, what's the TLB of this virtual address? And I'm told I have 2 to the 12 byte, 4,096 byte pages. So if we take this virtual address, what we're going to do is we're going to split it up into a VPN and a page offset. And the page offset, we're going to mostly ignore until the very end. We're going to take our VPN. This is going to go into our TLB. And then we're going to get out a PPN to combine with our page offset. So this VPN is what our TLB is going to split up into a TLB index and TLB tag. And we have 0x12, which is 0010010. Oh, I should just draw this here. Zero, and our index is this one bit here. And everything else is the tag. So the index in this case is 0. And that's where I'm out of time. So next time we'll review this and we'll go through a more complete example of what goes on with the TLBs.